fighting for America.
The one, the only, John Rich.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're so fired up that you're coming to the Idaho Center.
It's been a while since we've been up in your neck of the woods, so we're rolling into town to come give you guys a big and rich time, man. It's been too long.
Fighting for Idaho.
We got this little thing called the American Dream. Everybody should go to the biggest and best thing that they want to go for. We live in a country that lets us go for it. Don't be lazy. If you're an American, don't be lazy. Go for it.
Fighting for you.
You were always kind to me and treated me with respect, so I'm glad to hear you're out there and doing well. The folks out there now get to listen to you, so it's good for y'all listening.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning.
You've got a real rock star on your hands.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. We're joined by the one, the only, John Rich. Mr. Rich, good morning.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
You know, brother, I got to tell you something. I've been following you for quite some time. We're so fired up that you're coming to Idaho. You're coming to the Idaho Center. It is a privilege and an honor to speak with you.
Well, I appreciate that. We are excited to come. It's been a while since we've been up in your neck of the woods. So, Big Kenny and I, Cowboy Troy, the whole hee-haw gang, as I call it, we're rolling into town to come give you guys a big and rich time, man. It's been too long.
Can I ask you, how did you and Big Kenny hook up? Everybody knows that you're a great performer, great songwriter. They love you in Nash, Vegas. How did you guys hook up?
Well, you know what? We met in 1999. Kenny had moved to Nashville from Virginia, and I had been here because I was with the band Lone Star. So I had been here for several years before that. And we had a mutual friend who worked for Fender Guitars. She was a Fender guitar rep. She knew Kenny. She knew me. We didn't know each other. And she told the two of us, hey, you guys ought to get together and write. You should write a song together. She just said, you're two really interesting people. I'd be curious to see what would happen if the two of y'all wrote a song. And so we said, all right. So we got together and kind of blind date style, wrote a song, had a blast, and said, let's write another one. And wrote another good one. Well, let's write another one. And that turned into now 15 years of Big Kenny and I writing songs and making music.
John Rich, how do you define what we all think, put it in a song, and have us addicted to it again and again, listening to it on the radio?
Well, you know, I mean, songwriting is not a hobby, number one. I mean, if you're going to do it for real, if you're really going to try to write great things that will live longer than you will, which is the whole point of life, I think, in general, is to do things that outlive you. You know, it takes many, many years. You gotta work with people that are better than you are, learn from people, and then, you know, when an idea strikes you, the whole trick to a song is, like you just said, how do I take an idea and firmly plant that idea, you know, in somebody's head in 3 minutes? Oh, and it has to rhyme, you know? It's a challenge, man. I've written over 2,000 songs in my career, and out of those 2,000, there's been probably a couple of hundred of them that have been cut. So, you know, for every 10 songs I write, there's 9 of them that you'll never hear.
Kevin Miller with John Rich here at 580KIDO. Big and Rich coming to town Friday. Make sure you get your tickets. The Fan Jam, we'll have much more on that coming up. But back to you, to do what you do, whether it's the Celebrity Apprentice, whether it's Nashville Star, whether it's creating new acts, whether it's performing for yourself, whether it's the bar in Nash Vegas, you have to have an undeniable belief. And I'm sure people have said to you, oh, John Rich, you're never going to do this, this, and this. How have you overcome those doubters, and what can we learn from you?
Wow. I mean, I grew up in a trailer park in Amarillo, Texas. Now, Amarillo is up in the panhandle of Texas, so up in the top. You know, my dad was a non-denominational charismatic preacher. I'm the oldest of four kids. And, you know, honestly, if people tell you you can't do this or you're never going to do that or you're crazy for trying it, you know, there's two ways to take that. One is to believe them and then don't go for it. And the other is we got this little thing called the American Dream. And people said America was impossible, too. They said, why are you guys getting on a boat and heading across the ocean? You're going to die. Why are you doing that? And, you know, for me, somebody says, why are you doing that? You can't do that. I go, well, I just use it as fuel. And it's not that it's you turn around and go, see, I told you so. You don't have to say anything. You just go, let your actions speak for themselves. And I think that goes in any walk of life. Everybody should go for the biggest and best thing that they want to go for. Nobody should ever not go for it. We live in a country that lets us go for it. And that's why everybody is willing to, you know, crawl through the desert on their hands and knees if they have to get here. And we were born here, so we just have it. So if you have it and don't use it, you know, you run the risk of losing it. And I think that that goes into a lot of what we're seeing nowadays just across the country. Laziness, don't be lazy. If you're an American, don't be lazy. Go for it. This is a huge privilege to live here.
John Rich with Kevin Miller at 580KIDO. You know, I've learned a lot about you, and, you know, there, for a brief time I was in Nashville working at the talk station there, WTN.
Mm-hmm.
And this was many years ago, and I don't know if you remember me, but I had a chance to go to a private showcase that you guys invited me to, and you go, Kevin, we invite a million people to it. And I met a guy that was working at Best Buy, and I go, hey, what are you doing? He goes, well, you know, I write for John Rich at the Plowboy Mansion. I go, really? Tell me more. You give a lot back, and I'm going to hit you with something, and I don't know if this is you or not, but when I got the boot there, I got an email. The station got an email from somebody saying that they were John Rich, saying, hey, I really miss that Kevin Miller guy. And I've often wondered if that was you, and this was about 8 or 9 years ago, and I would always go over to the Warner Brothers place, which is over by Dumb Room, as you know,
yeah.
Sir, and I remember passing off Miller in the Morning mugs to you and all that, and I was only there for a brief time, but I remember you, and I always wanted to, and this is before, you know, you were, you know, as big as you were. You were even huger back then. You know what I'm saying. I'm getting nervous saying this, but I remember that email, and I'm just wondering if you remember me at all.
Of course I do. I mean, yeah, I mean, when I, you know, you were great. I mean, you are great. You know, I wish you were still here. But, you know, the folks out there now get to listen to you, so it's good for y'all listening. You've got a real rock star on your hands. And yeah, that was, you know, you were always kind to me and treated me with respect. And I, just like you are in this interview, and you know, it's not a hard thing to just pop a note to somebody, you know? So, I'm glad to hear you're out there and doing well.
Well, no, sir, I will tell you that made, so much, it meant so much to me because, you know, Nashville is such a dream and we're where God wants us to be. But to get that from you, really, it was one of the highlights of my life. So thank you.
Well, absolutely. So I'm assuming you're coming to the show.
Oh, my wife, I'm coming. Yes. When Rich Summer said, hey, what do you think of this? I go, dude, I've got to outdo Wild Country. I've got to be there.
Well, it's great. And you know what Rich, what they're doing over there at Wild Country is, if you buy a ticket, they're donating a ticket to a military personnel.
Yes. Yeah,
so
they are.
There's going to be a lot of military personnel that's going to get to come. You know, come to the show that otherwise probably wouldn't be able to come. So it's gonna be a great event. We can't wait to get there.
Well, as you can tell, I can't wait for you to be here. But if you have a minute, I have to ask you some more questions, if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
John Rich with us here at 580KIDO. Now, you sometimes, you'll go on with our friend Sean Hannity and others. You will talk a little politics. In fact, I believe it was New York where you and some friends of yours performed at the RNC, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was... I've been on the campaign trail with Fred Thompson.
Right.
I was out there with McCain. You know, I've done a lot of that stuff. And to be honest with you, you know, so I have taken bloody noses over some of that in my career. People that, you know, don't think along the same lines I think of about our country, you know, have. I've had people not play my music. I've had people not want to book me on a show. I mean, on and on and on. And so, you know, it is somewhat of a measured thing that I do when you're talking politics and you have a full blown career going on in a business that is largely liberal. But you know, everybody knows what I think and where I stand on stuff. So, you know, like in our shows, we don't speak politics on stage. And Kenny and I don't agree on everything anyway, so, you know, we kind of leave it out of our show. But when it comes to, like if you follow me on Twitter or anything like that,
right.
You might see me every now and then weighing in on something.
John Rich with us, Big and Rich here, Kevin Miller in the Morning at 580KIDO. How did you, by the way, brilliant, you winning the Celebrity Apprentice. You know, you did it with class, humility, effort. How'd you do that? What was that like going one-on-one with Trump?
Oh, Donald Trump. He's fantastic, right? John Rich, you're a great champion. That guy is something else. He's exactly on camera how he is off camera. I mean, that's him. He is a larger-than-life kind of guy. And the only reason I did Celebrity Apprentice was I, for years, have been a fundraiser and supporter for St. Jude Children's Hospital in Memphis. And I wanted to go on the show and see if I could, as a personal challenge for myself, and then also to just raise big awareness for St. Jude, I want to see if I could raise $1 million, because nobody ever raised $1 million on the show. And that was my personal goal. And the only way I was able to navigate that show, because I will tell you, I was there for 58 days, and 56 of those days I was on camera. So it was just brutal. I mean, it was a schedule like I have never had ever, and don't want to ever have that schedule again. But the way I navigated it was basically, you know, if you're playing on behalf of something bigger than yourself, then you have to put yourself in the back. So ego, things that are in your mind that you want to say, but you don't let them come out, because, you know, it may compromise the ultimate goal, which in that case was raising $1 million for St. Jude. And so it was an exercise in patience, and I actually learned a lot in those 58 days on just, if you're going after something big, how to patiently yet aggressively go after it.
No, it was amazing, and I go, watch out for John Rich. He's going to take this from week one, just based on your experience and your performance and everything else, and that level of maturity that a lot of people just didn't get.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people thought, oh, he's gonna turn a desk upside down, or remember, I grew up in a trailer park in Amarillo, Texas, all right, and with two younger sisters, and I grew up knowing how to break a guy's nose, you know. I mean, my granddaddy had 6 Purple Hearts in World War II and Golden Gloves boxer. My dad's a charismatic preacher who drives a Harley and has a 380 on his leg. I mean, you know, these are the guys I come from, so you can unfortunately Google some stories about me in previous years of fighting and, you know, rowdy and all that kind of stuff. So I think a lot of people thought, oh, that's what he's going to be like on Apprentice. Maybe even the people that asked me to be on the show thought I would do that. But it was a real opportunity for me to show everybody, nah, that's not really what makes me tick.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
My hair might be a little too long for your taste, my friend.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. We are joined by one of the biggest stars, not just in country music, but in the era of entertainment, sports, politics. You just kind of wonder, really, where he gets his vibe, his charge, his mojo, if you will. John Rich with us, Big and Rich, coming to town this Friday here at 580 KIDO. We're so proud of it. We're so happy. The idea of what fuels the fire, the motivation, is it politics? Is it music? Is it sports? I mean, coming to your city is so infamous, but I love it when you're talking about going to Chippewa and going to partying with the hillbillies, and a lot of people don't understand that, yeah, Marilyn Manson does live in Canton, Ohio, or is from Canton, Ohio. Where'd you get that from?
Well, Big Kenny and I were asked to do a songwriting mentoring class, basically, with these 10 kids, 10 young college kids who wanted to be songwriters. And they had won a contest or something and were able to sit down with Big and Rich and basically watch us write a song in front of them, and everybody's going to watch. And so we said, okay, everybody write down on this piece of paper what town you're from. And so it was 10 different cities. And we said, okay, here's the challenge. Can we write a song that incorporates all 10 of these cities and make it make sense? And so 2 hours later, Coming to Your City had been written in that room and has now been the theme song for College Game Day football for going on 10 years.
And you replaced Bubba Sparks.
Bubba Sparks?
Yeah, that was Bubba Sparks was the theme before you guys. You took over it. Bubba Sparks had the theme.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm friends with him. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, he was on for like 2 years, but then Coming to Your City, and then they have you kind of change it every once in a while, right?
Yeah, actually, the new one is going to tomorrow morning will be the first time it airs, and ESPN shot a whole new opening sequence for it. So it's actually Big and Rich and Cowboy Troy. And then there's this girl named Lizzie Hale, who's like a just phenomenal rock, up-and-coming rock singer, musician. Like, she's real, real rock and roll. And she's in it with us, too. So if you're turn on ESPN tomorrow morning, you'll see that.
Oh, yeah. John Rich with us, Big and Rich, Kevin Miller here at 580KIDO. Where did you get the lyrics for Big Time? That just sums up friendship, doesn't it? I'm amazed by that song.
Yeah, I mean, that's me and Kenny looking at each other going, you know, I mean, if you took away everything we've got, we would still be two guys with a couple of guitars playing somewhere.
Right.
I mean, with a tip jar. It's like I said, country music is not a hobby to us. It's what I've been doing it my entire life, you know. So I turned 40 this past January, and I started in Lone Star at 18. So I've got 22 years of making country music at 40 years old. So, you know, Big Time, that's what it's about. It's, hey, man, you know, if it all went away tomorrow, we'd still be sitting somewhere having a good time.
Right. I sing my song in the sunshine, sir. It's gotten me through some tough times, so thank you for that song.
You bet.
A very emotional GAC with you and Big Kenny about the 8th of November. Again, another cutting-edge song. And speaking of giving back to the military, what you did for that unit.
Yeah, the 8th of November is a song that Kenny and I wrote about a bartender that we had in Deadwood, South Dakota. So if you're a biker or anything, you probably heard of Sturgis, you know, the huge bike rally up there. So Deadwood's 10 miles from there. And this bartender, Niall Terrace, you know, we got to know him. We were playing this little place up there and found out his story that he had been in Vietnam, 173rd Airborne, in 1965, November the 8th. It was the first major ambush of Vietnam. And everybody in his platoon was killed except him and one other guy, and he was shot to smithereens. They got him out. He spent 2 years at Walter Reed Medical Center, then got out and went back and did three more tours of Vietnam. And, you know, retired Army Ranger and all this stuff. And we were just so blown away by his story and by him. Kenny and I, we said, we should write a song about Niles. So we wrote the 8th of November. And played it for him, and not thinking it would ever be on a record or the radio. And he loved it, and he just said, hey, make sure if you ever play that song, understand every veteran has a story like mine on the 8th of November. Everybody's got their own story if they've served. So always dedicate it to everybody. So we always do. So when we come to your town, we will be playing 8th of November, and all the military will get a huge salute from us and the entire audience.
Amazing. Now, John Rich, please correct me if I'm wrong here at 580KIDO. Didn't you and Big Kenny go back to Vietnam?
We did. We retraced Niall's steps and took him with us all the way back to Vietnam, got on a flatboat on the Mekong Delta and went 2 hours up the Mekong Delta, got off on land and then went on foot about 2 miles off out in the jungle and found the exact spot where that battle went down. Niall still had his boots from that battle, because the boots stayed on him, and somehow they wound up staying with him all the way back to the United States. I mean, soaked in blood and cut up, and he had just had them hanging in his garage, and he said it had always been a dream of his to go back to that spot and bury those boots. And so we said, well, let's make it happen, after the song became obviously a big hit and everything. So, yeah, we flew all the way back to the other side of the world, took Niles with us, and dug a hole and buried his boots.
Yeah,
and actually did a huge documentary on it that is viewable. If you go on YouTube, just punch in 8th of November, Big and Rich, and you'll see it right there.
Yeah, I remember watching that going, well, you're not an Amarillo anymore.
Yeah, Vietnam, it was an interesting trip. I don't have a lot of will to want to go back. And you know, and that's another thing about America, man. You go to other places like that, and you realize how people live. We've got it good over here.
John Rich with us here, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO, getting ready for Big and Rich coming up Friday. What about you? What about the future? We've talked about your great songs. They live forever. What about you, the new age of country? What's coming up for both of you, for you and Big Kenny?
We've actually got a song doing really well on the radio right now that Wow Country's been playing a lot called Look at You. It's doing great, actually. Just went into the top 20 this week and heading the top 10, it looks like. and a new record actually hitting the shelves September 23rd. So, you know, like 3 weeks. The record's called Gravity. There's a song on there that we wrote with Tim McGraw where it's Big and Rich featuring Tim McGraw. He's singing on the song with us. There's really cool music coming out. And, of course, this year, you know, we'll probably do close to 100 concerts and same thing next year. So if you're a Big and Rich fan, you got new music coming and you got lots of shows and, you know, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We're always hamming it up on there too. It's just a great time, man. I mean, how much more fun can you have than to be part of a group called Big and Rich, for God's sake?
How'd you come up with that?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We didn't come up with it. Everybody always called him Big Kenny, and I'm John Rich. So it's as a joke because we were kind of connected at the hip. You know, like Butch and Sundance, basically, and people just started saying, oh, look, it's Big and Rich, ha, ha, ha. Like it was funny, and then when we made a record, we said, well, let's call it Big and Rich. That's what everybody's calling us anyway.
What about the Music Mafia? How did that come about?
That came about out of necessity because everybody in it, Gretchen Wilson, Big Kenny, myself, Cowboy Troy, and many, many other artists, we were all a bunch of kind of misfit artists. Outlaw, misfit, against the grain kind of artist for what was going on in Nashville at that point. So we all just said, hey, we'll just start our own thing. So every Tuesday night for 72 Tuesday nights in a row without missing one, we had a little jam at a place in Nashville called the Pub of Love, which holds about 60 people. And every Tuesday we'd drag in speakers and drag the instruments and get up there and just start jamming. And Music Row found out about it, and the big executives started coming to the jams. And next thing you know, people are getting record deals, and Music Mafia became a real eye-opener, I think, in Nashville on what country music could sound like and where it was going.
Well, you all had your own calendar at one time.
Go Google Music Mafia, M-U-Z-I-K Mafia. It's a wild story. If you're looking for a good read, it's out there. All kinds of incredible things happen. And I just want to say thanks for the time on this interview, too. It's cool to talk to you again, and we need to make sure we get you backstage so we can reconnect in person.
Mr. Rich, I really appreciate it. God bless you, and thank you, sir.
Oh, absolutely. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I'll see you soon.
Okay. Take care now.
Take care, brother. Bye. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller with you, live to Jerusalem. We're joined by Emily Wither of Fox News Radio. Emily, good morning.
Hello, good morning. How are you?
Good to have you with us here at 580 KIDO. Obviously, ISIS, a big point of contention today and for the past couple months, and the lives of journalists put at risk by these folks. You yourself are in a country where bad things happen all the time. How dangerous is it for journalists abroad?
Well, at the moment, if you're a journalist going into Syria, you're probably the bravest person out there because it's become so incredibly dangerous. And there's a lot of discussion at the moment, Kevin, among my colleagues here in the region in the Middle East about how we continue to cover the Syrian conflict given the risks involved. It's been such a long time now before I was in Syria. I've been covering the conflict when I speak to Syrians from the border in Turkey, in Lebanon, and in Jordan. Going into Syria right now just is not an option for me. And for many other journalists, they too, their companies will not allow them to do it, or they're just not willing to take that risk. And there's a discussion, as I said, amongst us all about how we can still cover it, because many of us would like to still go in and speak to Syrians and share their story and also tell the world, essentially, as best we can through our articles and news pieces about what's happening in Syria. But it's just becoming so hard, and people are not willing to go back in there, which means the biggest losers of all of this will be the Syrian people, whose stories will largely go untold at the moment in the Western media because of this threat of kidnapping.
Emily, what has been the reaction of the community of journalists and yourself to the recent beheadings of two journalists?
Well, it sends shockwaves through all of us, and I think as well many are examining how it happened. But there are other journalists as well that are still in captivity. Many journalists have been captured and then released. We only have to remember Richard Engel of NBC News. His team was captured last year in Syria. and they were released after 4 days. They were lucky. There's been stories similar to his of journalists who have managed to escape or be released. Others are not so lucky. And I think a lot of it does sometimes come down to trust. There's been some stories about local fixers that journalists rely on. These are people on the ground who act as translators, who help drive us to places to get the addresses and set up interviews. And in some cases, they have been the ones to betray journalists, to break that trust and hand them over to various armed groups. There has been a few cases of that happening. So people are becoming increasingly nervous about who they can and cannot trust. Also, it looks as if in the case of James Foley and Stephen Sotlov was that they were originally sold to an armed group who wanted to make a little bit of money, who then sold them on to the Islamic State and other extremist groups. And that also raises a very worrying question for us all, and that is there are not only, of course, extremist groups operating in these areas of Syria and Iraq, but also there are criminal gangs who are taking advantage of the instability and just want to make some money.
Emily, you bring up a good point when you're talking about journalists being sold or hostages being sold. That seems to be a budding industry.
It is, and it's one of the main ways that these Islamic militant groups and these extremist groups make their money. The U.S. government says that they don't pay ransoms. We know Great Britain says that too, and we've heard that very recently from Prime Minister David Cameron when talking about the British hostage that ISIS is threatening to kill next. He has said that Britain is proud to maintain a policy of not paying ransom money. The argument here is that it only encourages terrorism and it encourages extremist groups to kidnap because they know they can make money from them. Other European governments will say publicly that they don't pay ransom money, but we suspect that in the last year or so, they have. Spanish journalists, French journalists, and Italians have all been released from the clutches of some of these extremist groups in the last year, and money has exchanged hands, sometimes brokered with the help of their governments. And so that does also raise a question, which many journalists have been discussing, is should there be a worldwide policy, or is it really fair that individual governments have different policies because it puts people of different nationalities more at risk? Some of the journalists that have been released in the last year actually shared a cell with Stephen Sotlov and James Foley. So it's raised a lot of talking points among the journalism community.
Well, has this changed the game when we talk about the risk? And Emily, a little insight into you. Why do you do this when you could, you know, be doing stuff either in England or in other parts of Europe? Why do you do this?
Well, I mean, I think I'll start by talking a bit about Stephen Sotlov because I was speaking to one of his friends yesterday here in Israel. He was an Israeli and a U.S. citizen. And one of his friends here gave an interview to the press and said, and I've heard this quoted by other members of Stephen's family, was that he wanted to have a tranquil life and a standard office job, but he was so drawn to what was happening in the Arab Spring here in the Middle East that he wanted to come here and experience it for himself. He wanted to share other people's stories, and he wanted to let the world know what was happening in some of these areas, some areas where there weren't many journalists and stories were not getting out. And I think that really sort of sums up why many of us want to do this job, including myself. We are drawn to these stories, we're drawn to the people, and we want to be available to tell their stories because we feel that it's important.
And yet you put yourself at danger.
Well, I'm not going into Syria, Kevin, and that's something that personally, if I was asked to go, I mean, I don't think my company would send me at the moment, given the dangers, but I don't think I would go into Syria right now. In fact, I don't even need to say I don't think. I would not go into Syria at the moment. I don't feel that the situation on the ground is safe enough. However, every day, of course, you do take risks, and you just have to calculate whether the risk and the story outweighs the other, whether you can take the necessary precautions. Of course, along with my colleagues at Fox News Television, I was in Gaza when there were Israeli airstrikes happening and there were rockets firing around us. And that, of course, was a very risky situation. But at the time, I felt that the necessary precautions were in place to ensure my safety. Of course, there was the danger that something could have happened, but I did feel that I had taken the necessary steps. when it comes to covering a place like Syria, at the moment, I don't feel that whatever steps I take to go into Syria would protect me enough from the risk of these armed groups and these criminal groups that are roaming around wanting to take Westerners hostage. I'm also a blonde woman with a British and an American passport, and I'm very aware that in a situation in like Syria, this makes me a target.
Emily, can you describe that urge to cover the story that you have to regulate with your own personal safety? A lot of us have it. A lot of us admire what you're doing here at 580KIDO, but I mean, it's something that a lot of people don't have, where you go in when the airstrikes are happening in Gaza to tell the story. Not everybody does that.
Well, I didn't have to go into Gaza. I wasn't forced to go in. Fox Radio didn't say to me, you have to go to Gaza. For me, it was a personal choice because I'd been covering the story from the Israeli side for a long time, and I'd been speaking regularly to Israelis, and I wanted to know what it was like on the other side. It's very easy to talk to people on Skype or to interview them over the phone or through email, but really you don't get a sense of what a place is like or what the people are experiencing unless you go there. And this is one story that I care very deeply about. I care very much about both sides, and I think that they each have a story to tell. And I felt that if I was going to report the story properly, I had to see what was happening on both sides of the border.
Emily, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Emily Wither, live from Jerusalem, exclusively with us here at 580KIDO. Can you imagine going into harm's way as the bombs are falling? You're in there covering the story. Amazing. Amazing. And again, we understand that you have a lot of choices, and this isn't anybody from management telling you this or having me read this. This is me being sincere with you. You know, we understand you have a lot of choices. That's why we work very hard to get Emily on and others to give you some information and opinion and analysis and hopefully some solutions. Boy, that's a mouthful every morning. Let's get you to work safely and on time at 580.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
You know, where else can you have Alan L. Morton, attorney at law, not only post on Facebook, but stop by and give us an apple fritter here?
Hey, how about that?
You know, I have a couple questions for you. By the way, Senator Risch wanted us to call you Esquire, but he's very familiar with you, by the way.
Well, of course, Jim and I have been good friends for many years, many, many years.
He said,
years.
Where'd you know that guy from?
Where do I know him from?
No, he said that to me.
Oh, yeah, Jim's been obviously a great trial lawyer many, many years and a loyal servant to Idaho in politics.
What are you running for office? That was just like a two-second comment there.
I am not, but I've been a big fan of Jim Risch for many years. He's a good friend.
I'm sure all of your clients and acolytes will rest assured with that information before 7 a.m. this morning.
Right.
So anyway, you brought by some apple fritters. So what is this, Feed the Fatty Day? And I go, hey, do you want one? And you said no.
No, it's in commemoration for Big and Rich. It's an acronym for Miller and Morton.
I would be the big and you would be the rich.
There you go.
Yes, apparently. So how do they used to vilify trial attorneys, those trial lawyers? Those ads they used to call people, trial lawyers?
Well, there are two types of people, my mama explained to me. There are those who hate lawyers and lawyers. So there you go. She warned me.
I see.
I just didn't listen to Mama.
So now, what are you doing? You're just in here to hang out? You know, usually we have, like, Liberal Steve or Two Fly Bri that just show up. You've raised the bar quite a bit here.
Well, I'm procrastinating, Kevin. You know, today is my day to go to the office to meet with the accountant, prepare tax returns, getting ready for our disclosures.
My invoice?
I just couldn't bring myself to get to the office this early. I just procrastinated. I thought, well, I'll give my good friends over at KIDO an apple fritter this morning.
All right, more coming up with our friend Alan L. Morton, attorney at law. You don't care if we talk sports a little, do you?
Oh, heavens no.
All right, sports and Medicaid.
Oh, hey, they go hand in hand.
All right, that's next at 580 KIDO. Good morning, Dave. All right, coming up next, Fox News Radio, Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.